The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Friday it begins. The slow attritional demise of your cherished dreams for the season. Today, then, we savour these final poignant hours when anything is still possible. New strikers, can any of them do a Ravanelli first day hat-trick debut? Established players, why them switching clubs gives us more New Jersey headaches than Tony Soprano with Richie Aprile. And loads of other questions as well, including does Forrest's Jizz Horn Camp interest mean he can't do the goal show anymore? All that and more in this Totally Football Show. And hello, listener. Thank you for being with us on this most auspicious of days, Thursday, 4th of August. I'm excited. You're excited. Tom Williams is excited. Hey, Tom.
Oh, yes. Hello, James.
Yes. Adrian Clark's with us as well. All right, Adrian.
All right. Yeah, absolutely buzzing.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And Laurie Whitwell's here too. Laurie, fresh back from down under.
Hi, James. How do the eye bags look?
Yeah, no, they look great. They look great. Listener, they look great. Brackets. Narrator's voice. Laurie's eye bags looked great.
For the purposes of the tape, Laurie doesn't look too tight.
Laurie, you got a big, unnaturally big grin right now, and I know that's because it's the opening weekend of the season. It's an exciting time. Producer Charlie is an Arsenal fan, says it means the day the Gunners get knocked off the top of the table. Although, of course, AFC Bournemouth in many places are currently occupying top spot. It is early to look at the league table, though. Laurie, what are you most looking forward to from the next few days?
Just football being back. Is it naff? I think probably from a Manchester United perspective, that's the club that I cover. You know, a bit more of reality as well. You know, I was away in Asia and Australia and it was all nice and blissful. And now here we are in the meaty end and Premier League defeats are incoming, I think.
Oh, yeah? Mm. All right. Brighton, the opponents at Old Trafford for this weekend's season opener for Man United. And reality already poking its nose around the door with, of course, all that Ten Hag, Ronaldo leaving early is unacceptable business. But we'll get onto that later on. Tom, much for you to discuss because you're off to Paris this weekend as another season of French coverage of the Premier League gets underway. We'll be asking you what they're most interested in later on. I want to ask Adrian as well, if you're going along to Friday's opener at Selhurst Park, Adrian?
No, I'm working from Emirates Studio, actually. Oh. So, yeah, I'm not going to be there, which is kind of frustrating, but I'm expecting a full throttle opening night. I think that'd be, there should be goals. I think plenty of excitement. Hopefully, Arsenal can actually show up this time. They were battered at Selhurst Park back in April, so they owe Patrick one. They really do, yeah. Patrick Vieira has had one over them last season, so it's time for revenge.
As an Arsenal insider, can you reveal, has Mikel Arteta been playing Glad All Over to the boys in training to acclimatise them?
I think it's only right. I shouldn't say this, but I'm not sure I'm having that. No, right. I'm not sure about the whole blaring the music out over the speakers. I think if I was a player, I would have been taking the piss out of that behind the manager's back a little bit, I think. But it's nice to try new things, but I'm not sure it would have made the slightest bit of difference.
I mean, it's the sort of thing, if it had worked, it would have looked great. Because then you get the story, and this is where it began. Right. Arteta and his team looked at how Arsenal had struggled at Anfield. You know, what was it? What were the things that had sort of unsettled the players? And they realised that it was, you know, listening to "You'll Never Walk Alone" and all the rest of it. But to have that scene followed by an emphatic 4-0 defeat is
great TV.
Is not a great look. But I mean, I went to the premiere of the Arsenal documentary that this scene appears in. And I felt a little bit of sympathy for Arteta in that you see quite a lot of his team talks, and it must be difficult to find ways to motivate footballers every 3 or 4 days, you know, new messages. And, you know, I'm sure there must be an awful lot of managers who lapse into cliche and who lapse into corniness. But there were a few moments where you thought, if you take away sort of the swelling strings of the soundtrack as Arteta speaks and the very artfully chosen shots of the players all looking, you know, attentive and sort of engaged, this is a little bit sort of Spanish Brendan Rodgers. It's the sort of thing that Brendan Rodgers would be absolutely hammered for. But at the same time, I mean, you know, if you've got to come up with inventive ways of you know, geeing your players up every three or four days, I'm not surprised that you end up coming up with stuff that just seems pure David Brent every now and again.
Well, so Amazon have done All or Nothing on Arsenal. We can get into it in more detail later on, but very briefly, worth watching, not worth watching? On a scale of Sunderland Till I Die to the Pogumentary, where would you put it?
Yeah. If you're an Arsenal fan, I mean, very much up towards the Sunderland Till I Die end. If you're not an Arsenal fan, I mean, if you're maybe a rubbernecking Tottenham fan who wants to relive Arsenal's failure to finish in the top four last season, possibly even higher. But if you fall into neither of those camps, maybe further towards the bottom of the scale.
Okay. Well, if you are an Arsenal fan, you'll know that Palace is the opening fixture for the Gunners on Friday. That's followed in the Premier League by Saturday's six games. Fulham against Liverpool. Welcome back. Bournemouth, meantime, entertain Aston Villa. Newcastle are up against Nottingham Forest. Spurs have Southampton. Tipped to go down in the Athletic's big Premier League preview, which is out on Thursday. Leeds are up against Wolves and Everton host Chelsea. Interesting one, that. Frank Lampard, etc. Sunday, Leicester Brentford, Manchester United Football Club against Brighton and Hove Albion, and West Ham Manchester City. Wow. Of course, we're going to pick out some of the juiciest footballing prospects from that list. But opening weekend is the most exciting weekend of the season. And in honour of that, producer Charlie has done a montage of his favourite opening weekend memories.
You need to buy players. You can't win anything with kids.
Cork waiting on the edge of the six-yard area. And Dean scores!
Here's Adderton with the cross. Klinsmann's free! And he's marked his debut with a goal!
Ravanelli, yes! It's a hat-trick.
Gary Taylor Fletcher celebrates. It's 4-0 to Blackpool.
Chambers, he's doing just that. Sadio Mane wanting a goal for himself, and what a glorious goal he's got.
And Beckenshaw, Sullivan off his line. Oh, that is absolutely phenomenal.
Woof. All right, was your favourite in there, Laurie?
I'm going to say the 3-1 Aston Villa, the you don't win anything with kids from Alan Hansen, just because it sticks in my mind. I was obviously a young kid at the time. The grey kits, the fact that United got trounced, Beckham scored a sort of speculative goal at the end though to give us a little bit of hope and a little bit of encouragement for the season. So it's kind of like, you know, the lull before the rise, I suppose.
Indeed. Adrian, what are your opening day memories?
I remember actually it's the anniversary, isn't it? It's the 30th season of the Premier League, and I was there.
I think it's the 31st, actually.
Wow. Okay. So yeah.
But no, I know, but 30, I mean, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to call it a number. Anyway, call it the right one. I mean, just
anyway. I was there on the first weekend, the opening day of the Premier League. Full stop. I'm that old, and Arsenal entertained Norwich, and it was a classic because. Ahead of kickoff, lots of razzmatazz around the Premier League. Parachutists landed on the centre circle, or they're supposed to land on the centre circle, and one of them crashed into the mural behind the goal because Arsenal were building a new stand in the North Bank. They had basically a giant piece of cardboard behind the goal, and one of the parachutists crashed into that. So that was a good start. And then Arsenal went 2-0 up and ended up losing 4-2. To Norwich City, which was crazy, very, very memorable. I was roasting hot in my, I don't know how to describe it. Used to have big, furry sort of blazers back in those days, very sort of oversized jackets, and yeah,
furry even in blazer. August.
What an image!
Yeah, awful. Yeah, we had to be smart. You see, you had to be smart. I'm sure I would have got that taken it off, but I just remember being roasting.
Interesting. Wow, a living piece of history, Adrian Clark, for you there. Can you trust opening day results in the same way that you can't trust pre-season results?
No, I don't think so. No, I think there's a higher probability of a freak result on the opening day of the season than at any other stage in the campaign. Definitely, because various teams often aren't ready, are they? I mean, look at Everton. We'll talk to them in a, shortly. They don't look ready. They haven't got a striker, which just is bizarre.
Haven't got a striker.
But you always get teams that are a little bit undercooked. You never quite know where you are because you're doing your thing. You're getting fit in your own environment. You never quite, you can't gauge how you are compared to everybody else. And sometimes it can go horribly wrong in a surprise way. So, yeah, I think there'll be a few shocks this weekend.
Interesting. Tom, we heard Ravanelli's hat-trick in there. The first and still to this day, the only player to score a hat-trick on his Premier League debut. Borough drawing 3-3 with Liverpool in 1996. Will somebody do a Ravanelli this time? And might it be at the London Stadium where Erling Haaland makes his league debut, especially given his habit of doing hat-tricks on debuts elsewhere? In his Bundesliga debut, 3 goals. His Champions League debut, 3 goals.
Yeah, I mean, as a football fan who came of age in the mid-late 90s, all of those clips sort of produced a Proustian rush for me. And I remember the Ravanelli one, the white feather, in those heady days at the old
Stelmet. He was 28 then, I looked, he was 28.
Did you remember exactly how he did the celebration as well? Because I knew he got his chest up, but I'd sort of forgotten that he just put the shirt over his head.
Over the head. Mm. Classic. The number of like lads in the playground at my school who were like running into goalposts, running into each other while celebrating goals at lunchtime in the weeks that followed. But yeah, I mean, you know, I was going to say there's hat-trick potential in that West Ham-Man City game. I mean, there is hat-trick potential in every football match that is ever played, of course. But I guess, yeah, when you've got a big-name centre-forward on both teams, that feels like a proper opening day fixture, doesn't it? Has Haaland, I'm trying to think what shirt numbers they've got. Has Haaland got, did he get the 9 from Jesus? And Scamacca, I think, has got the 7. So again, like, they've got proper shirt numbers as well. And yeah, I mean, I think without kind of overemphasizing this, I think incorporating Erling Haaland into their starting 11 is going to be a challenge for City, and perhaps a bigger challenge than people necessarily realize. I've said this before, and you go back to last summer and Chelsea signing Lukaku, who we all thought was going to be the missing piece of the jigsaw. When a team has learnt to play without a centre forward as successfully as City have, and as successfully as Chelsea have done the season before, when you then add a centre forward to that mix, it's not just an addition, it's also a subtraction. And we saw that in the Community Shield. The number of times Haaland seeing his teammates in advanced positions just starts bolting it down the pitch towards the opposition goal and not getting the ball. And as good as he is, as good as City's attacking players are, I'm sure they will figure it out. But it's, there are no guarantees that he's going to hit the ground running. And when you kind of look at the balance of power between City and Liverpool and having to adapt to the new signings they've each made, I think it would be easier for Liverpool to incorporate the players they've signed because they're basically slotting into the same system and being asked to do similar things. Whereas City playing with an out-and-out centre-forward, particularly with that kind of profile, is a novelty. So it might take him time to find his feet. He might score a hat-trick at London Stadium. Who knows?
He might well do. Adrian, you mentioned upsets. City lost their opening fixture last season. That was the same time slot, Sunday 4:30, away at Spurs. And they didn't have much luck at the London Stadium either. They didn't win either of their visits there last season in the League Cup and the Premier League. Who's ready to tip a grand start for the Hammers then?
I'm not. No. There's this sort of, I think there's a misconception that West Ham are a bit of a bogey team for Man City. City are 13 unbeaten against West Ham. So I don't think that, you know, Moyes always seems to run them closer than a lot of other teams. But I still think City's class. And I do agree with Tom on the adaptation period, but this guy can score all types of goals, and providing they get in and around the penalty box and put the ball in there, I think that he's going to score a hatful of goals. Watch out for Jack Grealish, by the way, in this match. He scored, talk about lucky grounds, he scored on his last 3 visits to London Stadium, and all 3 were really good goals. He scored in that 2-2 draw at the end of last season, and he got 2 during the pandemic for Villa as well, good solo goals. So he loves it there.
They all meant something as well, didn't they, Adrian? I think those goals.
Yeah,
keep
they did.
Villa up, and give City the title.
Exactly. And I think he might be the player that benefits from Erling Haaland's arrival, because I think he's a kind of guy that might tee him up in the way that Haaland wants. So, yeah, watch this space. I think, yeah, Haaland can make Grealish better.
Mm. so far a lot of question marks over how the integration is going to work, but there could be an emphatic response to that come Sunday afternoon from Pep and the boys. Meanwhile, Yin to Man City's title rival Yang are Liverpool, who are at Fulham, who last time they were up took 4 points off the Reds. That was the 2020-21 season, which ended with the Cottagers going down. They're back now. They've got Marco Silva in charge. His fourth different Premier League outfit. How have the other ones worked out? Checks notes. His last Premier League game, actually, curious enough, was against Liverpool. That was in charge of Everton. It finished 5-2 at Anfield in the derby. He lost his job subsequently. Other Fulham thoughts? It could be a busy afternoon for their new keeper, Bernd Leno, if he gets the nod.
Yeah, I mean, Fulham are they are the proverbial yo-yo team, aren't they? And you know, we've been here before twice in the last few years. You know, going up in convincing fashion, and then going down in equally convincing fashion. And yeah, I get the question as ever with Fulham is, can they translate what they did in the Championship last season to the Premier League, which is what's proved beyond them in previous seasons. I mean, there's been a less conspicuous transfer splurge than the last couple of times they came up. Some interesting signings. You mentioned Bernd Leno, who, you know, is an excellent goalkeeper. João Palhinha, Portuguese international holding midfielder. Feels like quite a sort of a canny buy and the sort of player you need if you're gonna hit the ground running. And as ever, Alexander Mitrovic. Is he going to score goals in the Premier League? And he does feel like one of those players whose level is somewhere between the Championship and the Premier League. And he, I mean, he, you know, the amount of goals he scored last season was absurd.
43.
You know, he blew the Championship to smithereens. But as yet, despite him having a profile that you would think would make him suited to Premier League football. Okay, he's not particularly quick, but he's got the physicality. He's very good in the air. You know, he's strong with his back to goal. It hasn't yet translated into, you know, into Premier League goals, and you know, that will inevitably be a factor. I think if Fulham can find a way of putting him in positions and he can get some decent numbers on the board, then you know, that would be a significant step in, you know, a significant step towards securing safety.
Adrian, why is it that Mitrovic hasn't had the same kind of returns in the Premier League? Do you think that there is a Premier League striker there?
I do, yeah, I do, but it is hard. When I look at him, I think he's got the tools to hurt Premier League teams because they're not accustomed to facing strikers of his ilk. Big guys, people that can really knock centre-halves around. When a cross comes into the box, they can just overpower them and head it into the goal and knock the defender flat on his face at the same time. You would think he would be a Premier League defender's nightmare because they're not accustomed to that as much as they used to be. But yeah, I think it's the sharpness. I think it's the speed of Premier League players that's the issue. He's a big unit and he's not that quick. He's not that mobile. He hasn't got twinkle toes. He can't accelerate past a defender in the Premier League like he can in the Championship. And I think that's the key difference. So I think they're going to have to provide him with really good service for him to score plenty of goals this season. You know, chances where they're on a plate for him. I think he just lacks that acceleration. It's just a 1 or 2 yards of pace which makes the difference between being a revelation in the Championship and being okay in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm. All right. You mentioned Everton. Chelsea, a fixture heavy with question marks. So let's get on to that next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Premier League players are not going to be doing the pre-match anti-racism taking the knee gesture. I read, this season, Premier League captains took the decision after consulting with players. Instead, they will perform it before certain rounds of games, including the Boxing Day fixtures. First one's back after the World Cup, that. And Cup Finals.
Yeah, I mean, it seems unfortunate in a way, in the, and at the risk of being looking at it in a simplistic way, the taking the knee is a protest against racial injustice.
Mm.
So why would you stop protesting against that while racial injustice still exists? I mean, and you know, taking the knee is not going to bring racial injustice to an end, but you know, this idea that people have kind of had enough of it, that it's kind of served its purpose, the kind of point is to kind of shove it down people's throats, because this is what it feels like to live with racial injustice. And you know, almost to the extent that, well, surely they should just be doing it more, do it for longer. I think the power of having that image before every single Premier League game, every person around the world who watches a Premier League match watches the taking of the knee and has to think about what that means and why the players are doing it. And that is, you know, that is a powerful thing. At the same time, it's up to the players. It's not up to the rest of us to decide. If that's how they feel is the best way of doing it, then, you know, then fair play. And the fact they're going to be doing it this weekend and before all those key fixtures mean it will still be, you know, it will still be part of the season. And yeah, you know, you hope that even with the players doing it less frequently, the message will still get through.
Indeed.
Yeah, there could be an argument that it becomes more powerful when used sparingly, I think, when there are a lot of eyes on certain matches. You know, these strategic dates in the diary where they're going to be used, you know, they're all big moments in the campaign. I agree, but it's down to the players, though. It's them that are making the gesture, and I'm assuming they've had votes among the clubs, you know, hands up who wants to carry on, who doesn't. Yeah, I think you have to respect the democracy among the players. This doesn't mean that the players don't care about racial inequality. I think it's about the, you know, the use of that message and whether it maybe is better served used more sparingly. But I can see the argument for Tom as well. You know,
it also depends if you replace that weekly gesture with something else. But whilst I totally respect their decision, as Tom says, having started the gesture, the act of stopping it without any significant change to the conditions that a lot of people are living with is in itself a gesture. Unfortunately, will be taken as such perhaps by some. Anyway, there you go. I mean, it's nice that they've been doing it, and it's been great that the Premier League has been promoting that, and it has done a lot for the message, clearly. A long way to go. Everton taking on Chelsea at 5:30 on Saturday. I mentioned question marks over this, not least who will play up front for the Toffees, who literally don't have a striker available. Solomon Rondon is suspended. Dominic Calvert-Lewin's picked up an injury. Crikey, Laurie.
Yeah, I mean, what has happened to Dominic Calvert-Lewin? Because, I mean, a couple of seasons ago, you know, he was England sort of in the squad, in the team, scoring goals. You know, other clubs were looking at him, 70 million. And last season just sort of drifted away, didn't it? And then this one looks like it's starting the same way. Selling Richarlison, though, okay, a lot of money that they got for him from Tottenham, but without having a replacement ready is kind of mad business. I mean, I know Everton aren't exactly the smoothest of sellers or buyers in recent years, so maybe it just follows along that theme. But yeah, and then Solomon Rondon, your one guy that you can go, okay, we'll just stick him up front. He's suspended. Brilliant. I mean, I don't know, who actually are they going to start up front?
I bet they never thought they'd regret letting Cenk Tosun lead, because he's gone to Besiktas this summer. But he might have actually got a game for once if he'd stuck around.
Cenk Tosun, that's a blast from the past. Blimey. Yeah, I can only think of Dele Alli, really, being as a false nine.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he wasn't like in the team at the end of the season, really, was he? He was like, you know, no. In and out. And I mean, Frank Lampard, obviously, the end of that last season was all about emotion, wasn't it? It was all about getting Goodison up and at him, and maybe they just have a guy up front that can kick a few players and that'll be enough to kind of get a draw and maybe a dodgy penalty if Anthony Gordon goes down, and then they you know, they can squeak a 1-0 win. But I mean, it looks pretty desperate for Everton, doesn't it? I mean, and it looked pretty desperate at the end of last season. You're sort of thinking they need some signings, and it's not really happened, has it?
I mean, in terms of the opening day fixtures, the good news for the Toffees is they have the best ongoing run in the top flight, unbeaten on the opening day for the last 10 campaigns. Chelsea, meanwhile, have lost each of their last four visits to Goodison Park, a fixture, of course, of huge significance for Frank Lampard as he faces the man who replaced him on the Chelsea bench, Thomas Tuchel.
I mean, it's an interesting one, I think, for Lampard and for Everton, because as Laurie says, they stayed up last season by going back to basics. I think when Lampard came in, he had ideas about the kind of football he might want to play, and realised quite quickly that there wasn't time to put anything more sophisticated into place, and so they basically just went for it and turned Goodison Park into a cauldron in tried and tested relegation battle cliche. And you go back to that the game against Chelsea in May, which they won, winner from Richarlison, who then lobbed the flare into the stand, which earned him the suspension, which rules him out of Tottenham's game against Southampton. But that was the kind of archetypal Everton performance of the back end of last season. The fans out in the street around the stadium with the blue flares, setting fireworks off outside the Chelsea team hotel the night before, and Everton just really flying out of the traps, really getting stuck into Chelsea. Jordan Pickford pulling off miracles in the Everton goal, and it proved enough to get them a win that ended up being a really important component in you know, what was ultimately a successful fight to avoid relegation. You can't approach an entire season playing football like that. I mean, I'd love it if they did. It would be great to see. But I mean, it's not sustainable. And the challenge, therefore, facing Frank Lampard is to really put his mark on this team, find a way of playing. And it's unfortunate that he is going to be without Calvert-Lewin for this opening fixture. And, you know, I don't suspect anyone's going to judge Everton too harshly by what they do against Chelsea. But I think for him, for the club, and also for sort of his own sort of, you know, managerial development, one of the accusations that was levelled against him when he was at Chelsea was that he talked a good game and we didn't ever really see that on the pitch. And that's the big challenge facing Lampard this season, is he found a way to get them out of the bottom three last season. He got the fans on side. You know, where does he take them now, having lost his best player in Richarlison and having lost some of that momentum from the end of last season?
I think the biggest challenge facing Frank Lampard right now is convincing Everton's players that this is not going to be another relegation struggle, because we can see it. We can see they're not ready. We can see they've got no striker. So can the players.
Don't you want the players to think they're in a relegation struggle?
No, you want to fill them with confidence, I think, ahead of the kickoff. Mm. Okay, maybe I should rephrase that. The biggest challenge Frank Lampard faces is to fill the players with self-belief and confidence that they won't be in a relegation battle this season. Because if I was in that dressing room, in that squad, preparing to face Chelsea, I would be a little bit nervous about it and thinking, oh, how's this going to go? I saw them in pre-season in America. I mean, they were awful, absolutely dire. Had five at the back. They couldn't play out from the back. They, you know, all they really had was a long ball to release, you know, the wingers every now and again. They've gone backwards as far as I can see. Let's see how they fare this weekend, but I fear that Everton are going to have a really testing start to the season.
Right, there's some challenges ahead for Chelsea, of course, not least getting used to the sight of Raheem Sterling in a Chelsea shirt. I mean, at least it's more or less the same colour. Gabriel Jesus at Arsenal, maybe. I'm a little bit more... I don't know. Is that going to be one of those ones that just never quite gets, you know, assimilated by your brain? Laurie, what do you think?
Yeah, is it not that he's kind of doing the Italian thing and just sort of ticking off all the big clubs in England? You know, like
Raheem.
How, yeah, like how, you know, Christian Vieri would do, I suppose, back in the day. You know, I mean, where you know, he could go to Tottenham after this. You know, you could sort of see him there, maybe. You know, on the way down in his career, maybe. You know,
if Crikey, well, you never know. I mean, a lot of people have Tottenham actually finishing above Chelsea this season. But in terms of players who you never get used to them being in a different jersey, you so associate them with one club. I mean, for me, Gabriel Jesus is right up there with this Arsenal move.
Mm. James Ward-Prowse was the one that came to my mind. I don't know if we're allowed to sort of speculate if he ever did move.
You
know, he hasn't moved. So, but in my mind, him going somewhere else. And I know he's linked with other clubs, isn't he? Aston Villa, and I'm sure that he would want to kind of try himself in a club that had European aspirations more regularly. But yeah, he is, for me, just Mr. Southampton. He's their guy. So him in another shirt would be really weird.
Imagine him in a Portsmouth shirt. I mean, seeing as we're just kind of just plucking things out, imagine James Ward-Prowse in a Portsmouth shirt. Right. How weird that would look. Right. How weird that would look.
Is there a picture of him in a Portsmouth shirt? Is that what you're getting at?
I'm sure someone will Photoshop one for you.
On a similar vibe, James, seeing Ian Wright in a West Ham shirt just never sat right. I mean, just Google it. Just Google it. You think, hang on, that didn't happen. That couldn't have happened. But it actually did. He's got the, you know, Dr. Martin sponsored claret and blue on. He's celebrating a goal. It just looks like it must have been like a charity game or something, but it wasn't. Lampard in a City shirt looked weird.
Yeah, that was wrong. George Ware at Chelsea.
George Ware at Chelsea, yeah. Yeah. Shevchenko at Chelsea.
Anyone.
Fernando Torres at Chelsea. I think if suddenly basically everyone who Chelsea have signed in the last 10 years. I think if you're used to seeing someone playing in red and then they go blue, yeah, or the opposite, yeah, that's yeah, quite yeah, a
that's my Gabriel Jesus Adrian, sorry.
I see. Now I was going to say for Laurie, I don't know if he's too young to remember Alan Smith in a Manchester United shirt, but Alan Smith was so Leeds. He was just Leeds. The Leeds glory era with the sort of bleach blonde hair. And for them to see him in a Man United kit just never looked right. And I don't think he felt right either.
No, it never quite worked out, that move, did it? I mean, he did have glimpses of moments where you sort of thought this could work, particularly in midfield, when Ferguson decided to just, you know, because he wasn't scoring goals. Okay, let's just try him in midfield. But yeah, I agree with you on that one. For some reason, Andy Cole in a Blackburn shirt just popped into my head. I don't know why. That was another kind of incongruous one.
Good shout.
It took me a long while to get used to Jack Grealish in a Man City shirt last season, for example.
Well, is that going to be the same with Calvin Phillips and Man City now? Mm. Is that going to be... It's kind of like, as you say, I think it's the actual colour of the shirts, isn't it? So white to kind of laser blue is kind of okay on our eye, you know, in terms of the palette. it sort of goes close by, but I don't know.
Anyone joining Norwich would be a challenge. Mm. Let's talk about, though, Jesus and the Gunners, to borrow a slogan from the NRA, and the trip to Selhurst Park, because, Adrian, you said right at the start how badly Arsenal fared and how important it's going to be for Mikel to get his players ready for a ground that's not been hospitable for them.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, Vieira in both the games last season pressed Arsenal relentlessly. It was vicious, really, the way they got about them, and it unsettled Arsenal, and they didn't get any rhythm, and they were bullied and overpowered, and they were two incredibly tough matches. They scraped a lucky draw at Emirates, battered 3-0 at Selhurst. So that's, you know, I think they'll be ready. They'll be more ready for that this time around. Of course, they've not got Conor Gallagher.
Yeah, this is a better Arsenal side.
Oh, honestly, I've watched every minute of pre-season and it couldn't have gone better. They've looked really fit, really sharp, cohesive. They've kept the same team, the same starting 11 for the last two friendlies. I mean, I don't remember anyone ever keeping a settled starting 11 in pre-season. It's strange, really, but that is how sort of equipped they are for the first match. The lineup is sorted. And Gabriel Jesus, I would grade 10 out of 10 for his pre-season. He has been utterly electric. Not just scoring 7 goals in 5 games, but his all-round play has been astonishingly good with his hold-up play, the turns, the dribbles, the creating for other players. He has increased the speed of Arsenal's attacks, you know, by 3 times, I would suggest, compared to somebody like Lacazette. Everything's happened a little bit quicker. So I just hope that he hasn't peaked too soon. He couldn't be in better shape coming into the season, but of course, it only really matters now, doesn't it? And what his form's like from here on in. But he looks great. He looks like he wants to be the main man. He looks like a different player. And he looks ready to step up and be a 20-goal-a-season striker. And that's pretty exciting for Arsenal fans who have already fallen in love with him. Really, they have. It's good to see.
Nice. Wilfred Zaha has also been scoring goals in pre-season, for what that's worth. 5 in 3 friendly fixtures. What have you seen from Zinchenko so far?
Fleeting glimpses. I mean, he's very neat and tidy, isn't he? He passes beautifully. There's been a few crossfield passes to Saka where you've just gone, sort of stop it. but I don't think we'll see the best of Zinchenko straight away. I think he's going to start the season at left back, and he's a perfectly serviceable left back. Tierney's been injured, so he'll start there. But what I'm excited to see is Tierney return and Zinchenko move into the left side of midfield, where I think that he could be a revelation for the team. He'll add real balance there. And the interchanging with Tierney, the movement, the underlaps, the overlaps, I think is quite an exciting prospect. So, yeah, he's technically an outstanding footballer, and he's very Arsenal in terms of the sort of players that have thrived down the years there.
Hi, I'm James Richardson with a quick word on the audio treats The Athletic have in store this season. Three times a week you get the award-winning Totally Football Show with the likes of James Horncastle, Raphael Honigstein, Carl Anker and Rory Smith and me. Mark Chapman hosts The Athletic Football Podcast, a flashy four times a week with David Ornstein, Adam Crafton and many others. The Athletic Women's Football Podcast will have all the Women's Super League coverage off the back of their brilliant Euros. And The Offside Rule is back too with weekly episodes. That's not all. There are eight dedicated club shows. There's Adam Hurry's joyous football cliches show, Michael Cox's insightful athletic football tactics podcast, the offbeat TIFO football podcast, and a revamped football manager show too. Ooh. You can get all of these shows wherever you find your podcast or listen ad-free on the Athletic app.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Laurie, let's talk about Man United then.
Come on.
Yeah, let's do it. 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon, they're going to be facing Brighton. Brighton, who blew United away only a few months ago, 4-0. Crikey. But those were different times, a different United manager, Erik ten Hag. This is his first Premier League game in charge. Where do you want to begin with this one? Is it a Ronaldo thing? With him departing the Rayo Vallecano friendly at half-time, and people thought, well, maybe that's all right. The club has said, yes, you can. But no, Erik ten Hag has publicly come out and pointed the finger at the Portuguese star.
I think that is the big story, isn't it, from the whole summer. You know, the fact that just before pre-season was supposed to begin for him, he didn't show up. You know, we talk about the personal issues that Erik ten Hag keeps mentioning, and you've got to respect that. But equally, you know, the wider context is he wants to leave the club. So for him to leave the match before it had finished, having played in the game, there were other players that left before full time, and I think ten Hag made a point of actually criticising them as well in this interview with the Dutch broadcaster. But nevertheless, you kind of think, having played in the game, there's kind of more imperative on you to sort of stay in here, the kind of post-match debrief, or just show your commitment in that way. You know, he did pose for pictures with fans. That was probably part of the strategy, I guess, to make sure you are seen leaving the ground early, whilst also, you know, letting yourself be giving the fans
what
they want.
Ronaldo posted the pictures himself.
He posed for pictures with fans.
Oh, I see.
But, I mean, I guess he knows that they're going to go viral straight away.
Can I just butt in quickly on this, right? Mm-hmm. Erik ten Hag is a disciplinarian. I think that much is, he's a renowned disciplinarian, right? And the main thrust of his work in pre-season is to sort of knock the players into shape. Isn't this a terrible reflection of his abilities as a disciplinarian, that not just one player, but several feel that it's okay to leave a match at half time? It's almost like they're challenging him to say, well, what are you going to do about it?
Just a brief thing. Adrian, how rare is it for it to be okay to leave a match at half time, even a friendly?
I would say it's rare. I might have done it myself when I was playing non-league football, like a non-league friendly where no one cares, and I've done my 45.
But in a professional context.
Yeah, I can't really get my head around, especially Manchester United. I can't get my
Manchester
head around
United Football Club.
How anybody would feel, well, that's okay. No one's going to mind if I leave at half time. It's what's the rush? You're there to work. It's a work day. Mm. Unless you've been permission to clock off early, you stay, don't you? And I just think it feels to me from the outside looking in that Ronaldo certainly being deliberately antagonistic, but others are maybe also challenging the disciplinarian style of ten Hag, saying, okay, you know, how far are you going to go?
I mean, it's a thrilling subplot, isn't it? And you go back to last season and there were complaints that there wasn't enough genuine hatred in the rivalry between Liverpool and Manchester City. The Premier League thrives on rivalries. So to have the manager of Manchester United already at loggerheads with the most famous player in the entire division before a ball's even been kicked, I mean, maybe the Premier League's getting its aggro back.
I think a little bit of context, I suppose, on the other players leaving, Adrian. I don't know what you think about this, but they were obviously in the stands, so they weren't part of the game, and I've seen people leave matches, you know, 10 minutes before the end. Your scouts and directors, if they're scouting a match, they kind of, you know, they've watched enough, they can go and whatever, beat the traffic, I think was sort of one of the lines that was being suggested over the weekend. And did Ronaldo leaving sort of give them a bit of a green light to go, okay, well, if he's off, we can go? And that's kind of the snowball effect that Ten Hag clearly wants to stamp out. And he probably hadn't said before the game, don't leave early. He probably didn't think he needed to, you know. So in a
maybe
way,
there was a car share. Maybe there's a car share. Well, there thing we go. Going on. I need a lift home.
Well, I mean, it was interesting to see Cristiano Ronaldo driving in George Mendes, wasn't it, to Carrington when he first reported back. I kind of thought that was an interesting dynamic. But clearly it's going to be something that Ten Hag's got to deal with throughout the season. I mean, Ronaldo did his Premier League media day the other day fully. So, you know, that, I don't know, is that a sign that he's staying? It certainly was notable, apparently, for people at the club. But yeah, it's something that Ten Hag, as you say, Adrian, he's come in with a disciplinarian attitude, and we saw that on pre-season tour where he was very strict with the players. Even in training, he was stepping in when they weren't doing things that he wanted to, barking at them, you know, swearing at them, you know. And now you've got Ronaldo into the mix, who clearly will push buttons if he doesn't, you know. He's his own man, isn't he? He's you know, he's got an ego that's massive, and he won't just sort of kowtow to anybody. He's got to earn his respect, and it's going to be an interesting sort of, you know, struggle, I suppose, to watch as the season goes on.
Yeah, it's an interesting question to resolve, not just in the dressing room, but also tactically on the pitch, given the way that United enjoyed some noteworthy successes without him in pre-season. We did a big season preview on Tuesday, in which James Horncastle said he thought, despite all of this, United would be back in the top four. Laurie, your verdict?
I love James's enthusiasm and hope. What gives me hope is Erik ten Hag and how impressed I've been with him, and how clearly he is a manager and a coach different to Solskjaer and Ranić. He will be on the training pitches directing people. He's got a very clear idea of what he wants and in his mind how he can get it. So that gives me faith, because you look at the lineup that's going to be playing against Brighton, there's probably not going to be a new signing in it. You know, Lisandro Martinez still working his way in, Christian Eriksen sort of likewise, Tyrell Malacia. We think Luke Shaw probably has got the nod on him, but that's the only one that maybe you could give a toss up to. So it's going to be the same team basically as what, you know, finished sixth last season in such desperate fashion. Now clearly Ten Hag's a better manager than Ralf Rangnick, but you know, it still adds a really big question mark over it all. And then you look at the other teams, and I mean, Adrian's waxing lyrical about Arsenal, which is nice. You know, they've got a couple of Man City players coming that way after all those Arsenal players that were going Man City's way over the years. But I mean, Chelsea look a little bit ropey perhaps, but Liverpool and City just look as strong as ever. And Tottenham, you know, with Antonio Conte there, right now, I struggle to see how United make the top four personally, because I think it's going to be a season where Ten Hag tries to instill his ideas and gets that discipline that we're talking about, but it might be a bumpy ride.
Mm. Brighton, meanwhile, on their eternal quest to resolve the goal-scoring issues, have signed German striker Dennis Undav out of European revelations last season, Union Saint-Gilloise. Talks about them on the Euro Totally Football show. Tony Bloom's Belgian outfit then, you recall, they dominated the Jupiter Pro League but missed out because of the strange kind of postseason playoff thing. Anyway, speaking of Union Saint-Gilloise, they're currently 2-0 up against Rangers in the third qualifying round for the Champions League group stages. One of those goals, a hugely controversial and, let's be frank, pretty wrong-headed penalty that was awarded to the Belgians, the second one, for a handball given against Connor Goldson. If you're a Rangers fan, you'll know what I'm talking about. The ball basically ricochets off one of Goldson's own teammates onto him, which means by the letter of FIFA's own laws, it should not be a handball. But there you go, it was given. Anyway, second legs to come next week. Brighton, though, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, Dennis Undav, the latest man who's going to be charged with the responsibility of helping to turn some of Brighton's territorial and possession dominance into goals, which has proven beyond a succession of strikers. Well, indeed, that is very much the question. But I think Brighton are potentially particularly thorny opponents for Manchester United in this stage, this early stage in the Erik ten Hag era, in that, you know, Erik ten Hag is clearly a man with very clear ideas about the sort of football he wants to see, and we saw glimpses of that in pre-season. I mean, you know, some of the goals United scored in pre-season were absolutely sensational, carving teams apart, you know, passing triangles, third man runs, you know, all looking very slick. But you know, Brighton are much more advanced in their football development than United in terms of having a clear structure and everyone knowing what their jobs are. And you go back to that meeting, the last meeting between the teams in May, when Brighton absolutely tore them apart. And we've said so many times in recent years, oh, this must be rock bottom for United. Surely they can't fall any lower. That really did feel like rock bottom. You know, you had Ronaldo with his hands on his hips at 3-0 down, and Brighton could have won even more comfortably. So it'll be interesting to see how successfully United are able to dominate possession in the way that Ten Hag wants to, because Brighton are a very difficult team to disrupt. They're a difficult team to get the ball off. I think that makes it, that gives it sort of an extra element of danger, because it's one thing to come unstuck in your opening fixture. It's another thing to come unstuck against a supposedly inferior team who actually play better football than you. And that's what happened when these two teams met in May. So I think it'll be a really useful yardstick for that kind of early Ten Hag progress to see how, you know, the extent to which United are able to impose themselves.
Brighton's away form was top draw last season against the big boys. 1-2, drew 4, only lost 2. So they're definitely awkward match day one opponents.
Boom. All right. Well, we'll have a quick check on some of the other games awaiting us this weekend. One or two of the other key stats as well after this.
Hello, I'm Kate Borsay, co-host of the Athletic Women's Football Podcast. It's been an incredible summer. We've seen things we'll never forget, but it doesn't have to end here. We'll be back for the start of the WSL season in September, and we really hope you'll be there too. Follow or subscribe right now at the Athletic Women's Football Podcast, wherever you get yours.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Listener, Barcelona, if they're too broke to pay their players, how can they keep signing new ones? Well, The Athletic have the answers to this. There's a brand new article actually about this, explaining it all. And if you fancy having someone tell it to you rather than using your eyes, then there is a special The Athletic Football Podcast out on Barcelona with Ian Irving, Adam Crofton and Paul Ballas. Tom.
I can't believe how much criticism Barcelona are getting for what they've been doing this summer. At a time when we're all struggling to pay our bills, the world has never needed an example of how to stretch no money as far as possible. So, perhaps there's something we can all learn from it.
Talk to your energy company about levers. We're all off to the Lowry in Manchester next Tuesday for a special season preview. And we'll probably review that opening weekend a bit as well. Head to thelowry.com if you want to be there when Michael Cox, Duncan Alexander and Julian Laurens take to the stage with me to talk and other things. Tom, you'll be off to France this weekend for the start of a new Canal Plus season of Premier League coverage. What are the French most agog about for this new Premier League campaign?
I think they're asking the same sorts of questions that we are, you know, looking at the title race and how, you know, the new signings are going to affect things, you know, who's going to settle first out of Haaland and Nunez and who can crash into the top four. Bit of interest.
Just all over Europe, it's the same conversations with different accents, essentially.
Pretty different accents, different hats. And also a bit of interest in Nottingham Forest being back in the Premier League after their long absence. There was a double page spread in L'Équipe the other day about Forest being back in the big time and Brian Clough and all that. So yeah, great anticipation in France for the Premier League, and you can catch it all on Canal Plus starting with me on Saturday. Is it Fulham Liverpool, the lunchtime game?
Yeah,
that's where
right.
all begins.
All right, Forest, their first Premier League fixture this millennium. We'll see them visit Newcastle. So new look, Nottingham Forest at Newcastle. 13 signings now, I believe, and 14 could be on the way because they have jizz in their plans to kind of...
Pardon?
And the surname's good.
Jizz Hornkamp. Dutch striker Jizz Hornkamp. And yes, all right. Make your jokes about clean sheets. Go on then, Laurie.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Poor chap. What a burden to have. I mean, it's not...
Just to say, we probably shouldn't be premature. Hasn't yet reached the climax.
Somebody was asking on Twitter whether English names sound as funny, or some English names sound as funny in Dutch.
Would you remember when, not so much Dutch, but when Arsenal was sponsored by Sega and it provoked some titters in Italy because Sega apparently means w***er, James, or something? I'm asking you because you speak Italian, not because you are a w***er.
I might have heard that expression. No, I believe it means cherished television personality. I used to get called that a lot. No, it is the vernacular for the verb. But anyway...
Please, can they come up with a good song for him, the Forest fans? They've got lots to work with there, haven't they, surely?
If they don't, they want kicking out of the league.
I mean, I'm horny, 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 just as a start, you know.
There you go.
Let's get that ball rolling.
Yeah.
Poor chat. I hope we've shot our bolt, as it were, regarding this. Because I think we just, you know, once, let's get it out and then we can just kind of move on.
I think we all thought that Forest's business was done. They've signed so many players. You know, I was convinced that they'd already, you know, they'd already blown their wad. And here they are potentially splashing out again.
So sorry. Should probably point out there's a fair chance that Hornkamp's first name is actually pronounced Yiz, though, because, you know, he's Dutch. Adrian, it is a very different Nottingham Forest. So, you know, your experience watching them in the Championship counts for nothing, I guess. What about Newcastle?
They have been measured. Go quickly on Forest. I don't think it will count for nothing because Steve Cooper will, I think, play the same way. So it's just about getting better players in the positions. There'll still be a counter-attacking team. They'll still, you know, have a big man up front. Awonyi is the guy with Brendan Johnson. They'll still have Lingard as the sort of link man, and they'll use the flying wing-back. So yeah, I kind of can picture what Forest will be, and I think they'll be a good away team, actually. I think they'll cause a few issues for teams. Newcastle, yeah, surprisingly measured. I like the goalkeeper choice. I think Nick Pope was the one you had to get. Out of all of the relegated sides this summer, he was the prize asset, and Newcastle were pretty swift there because their goalkeeper was okay, Dubravka, not bad, but Nick Pope is a definite upgrade. I think he's class. Botman it comes with pedigree, doesn't he? Who knows how he's going to fare.
Tom, you have seen him in action at Lille, of course.
Yeah, fantastic player. You know, big, tall, physical, left-sided centre-back. Looks sort of ready-made for the Premier League, really. And you know, has been linked with all sorts of major clubs over the last couple of seasons. Was a key figure in the Lille team who won the Ligue 1 title in 2020-21. So, yeah, a bit of a coup, I think, for Newcastle to have picked him up. And I think one thing we have seen this summer is that they've been linked with a lot of big names, Newcastle. There's obviously a lot going on there in terms of, you know, in terms of inquiries being made about players. And I mean, certainly, you know, in the French sports media, there's been a suggestion that a number of players who have had opportunities to go to Newcastle have turned it down because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to move to the northeast of England. They don't want to live in Newcastle. So which is a sign that for all their wealth and for all the, you know, the dynamism that Eddie Howe brought to their football in the second half of last season, that they're not yet ready to start competing for the very biggest names in the sport. But yeah, I think Botman is a really good signing, and yeah, someone who a lot of the big clubs were looking at.
Mm. Matt Target's loan deal, meanwhile, also being made permanent. In terms of competing, since the turn of the year, actually only Liverpool, Man City and Spurs have taken more points in the league than Newcastle. So they may well be a force to be reckoned with. Sorry, Adrian, we were halfway through your thoughts on Newcastle before I went to Tom on Sven Botman.
Yeah, not too much more to add. I'm surprised they haven't invested in a striker yet. I'm sure they will. I like Callum Wilson. I think and Wood's got something to offer. But Wilson's a good player, but we know that he's injury prone. He's not played a full season for quite some time. So until they get that front man in, it'll be hard to judge exactly where they are. But the way that they swept Arsenal aside at St James's Park, and I know Arsenal were terrible on the night, but Newcastle were also brilliant. And I don't think that should be overlooked. And the atmosphere there and that sort of good vibes that's engulfing St James's Park at the moment, I think if that continues with a bright start to the season, it's going to be one of the toughest away trips in the division because, they're starting to really believe, aren't they, in Eddie Howe and the team. But I think to have top six aspirations, they need two or three more good players through the door between now and the end of the window.
All right. Elsewhere, Duncan Alexander pointing out that this Wednesday marked the exact point that Spurs' last league title in 1961 was as close to the 19th century as it is to the present day. A Tuesday, we were toying fancifully with the notion that their next title might actually not be too far away. The pitch will have the verdict on that, of course, and it all begins for Spurs this Saturday at 3 o'clock at home to Southampton, who I mentioned are predicted to really struggle this year. Other fixtures that are out there, Bournemouth up against Aston Villa. Bournemouth also predicted to struggle by literally everyone. They're the bookies' favourites to be relegated. A Villa who've now picked up Diego Carlos out of Sevilla. Is that going to be a significant signing?
Yeah, I think it's a very good signing. I mean, they did their business very early, Villa. They brought in Diego Carlos from Sevilla and Boubacar Camara from Marseille. They obviously nailed down Philippe Coutinho to a permanent deal as well. So they look in pretty good shape. But I'm intrigued to see what we're going to get from Villa because they really limped over the finish line last season. They won only two of their last 11 league games. And I think there was a sense quite quickly that Steven Gerrard got the team playing the way he wanted them to. You know, he's kind of landed on this sort of 4-3-2-1 shape that he used at Rangers previously. But they did lose momentum and you know, they didn't... it wasn't like things fell into place and you know, they kind of, you know, sort of like flew to the finish line. It was a bit of a bumpy end to the season. But I think having got their major business done so early and having had a full pre-season with those players and, you know, away at Bournemouth is quite a kind opening fixture. You know, they'll be looking to hit the ground running. Interesting that they've changed captaincy as well, which is something you don't get all that often, that Tyrone Mings has had the armband taken.
Something to do with John McGinn. Do you think that's because Carlos has come in and that he's no longer a guaranteed starter? I think maybe that's...
That's probably it, isn't it? I think, yeah.
On Villa, very quickly, name to look out for this season, if he stays, is Cameron Archer. I know that they just sold Chukwuemeka to Chelsea. Cameron Archer, he's 20. He went on loan to Preston last season. He's played for the England junior teams. He is a goal scorer. Really, really sharp in and around the box. Reminds me a little bit of Ian Wright back in the day. He's that sort of style of striker. And I think he's had a very good pre-season. So he could, maybe not at the start of this season, but he could push the likes of Watkins and Ings for a starting berth. I think he's at that point now where he's ready to maybe become an impact sub at the outset. So yeah, Cameron Archer, keep your eye on him. From what I've seen of him, he looks a player.
Crikey. Villa will be at the Vitality Stadium Saturday at 3 o'clock. At the same time, Leeds at Elland Road will be hosting Wolves in what is an early six-pointer, I'm saying. Extraordinary match last time they met. That was back in March. Leeds were 2-0 down and came back to win 3-2 against Wolverhampton Wanderers, who have issues, Everton-esque issues up front. Raul Jimenez is injured. Fabio Silva's no longer there, although Adama Traore has returned from his loan spell at Barcelona. Adrian?
I don't want to talk about the game. Well, I can if you like, but I went on holiday recently. Stayed at a nice hotel, got to say, and staying there was a Premier League footballer.
Oh, yeah.
By the name of Luke Ayling of Leeds. He's injured at the moment. So it's quite fun to have a Premier League footballer just sort of in this all-inclusive resort. And the standout feature, I didn't want to go over anything, be one of those busybodies. But the standout thing about Luke is that he's got a portrait tattoo of his wife on his back that covers half of his back. And it was incredibly lifelike. It was almost like a photograph because there she was standing next to him, chatting in the pool with a cocktail. And he had his back to me. And all I could see were two versions of his wife. It was an incredible tattoo. And it just struck me as, how bold is that to get a half back tattoo of your missus? Right.
What, that's, because the marriage,
that's love, isn't it?
But, well, yeah, it's optimism as well. Plus, how's she going to feel waking up every day to a reminder of what she used to look like?
That's a great point.
It's good that you can detect that, though, Adrian, because usually you have to get. So what? Who's this? But you could see literally in front of you. You knew it was her.
It was very. Yeah, it just looked just like her. So it was very impressive. But yeah, I think James makes a really relevant point. Oh, okay. It's going to be looking at the old days, isn't it? As
an hour
time
in,
passes.
It finally
and was she telling him, "Don't look now," but the former Arsenal striker Adrian Clarke is staring at your back on that sun lounger. Does he let his hair down on holiday, Luke Ayling? I'm guessing he quite literally does.
No, bun up. No, bun was
bun
bun
up.
Was fully in place.
Really?
Yeah,
even by the pool.
But it's not like the Gareth Bale situation, is it? Where the top knot is kind of covering something.
Oh, is that what's happening with Gareth Bale?
That was the suggestion. Tom, you obviously were there when it kind of fell out at the Euros a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Don't
go ruffling Gareth Bale's hair if you know what's good for
is
you.
Is that right? Yeah. I had no idea. All this time, Tom, you and I could have just been employing a top knot fashioned from who knows where.
It's the modern Bobby Charlton. It's the new comb over.
I had no idea that Gareth Bale, good Lord, was a fellow struggler.
I mean, that's the allegation, at least. If you Google, Gareth Bale bald, you'll see. Yeah,
he might review it. He might claim it was a bad angle or whatever, but, that's the suggestion. I was actually in a hotel with Leeds players as well, Adrian, over the summer, weirdly enough.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They were in our hotel in Perth because they were playing in pre-season. Had a chat with a couple of people. They were kind of happy that they'd got their deals done early. They were saying that Rafinha plays very wide and that doesn't quite subscribe to Jesse Marsh's kind of narrow attack. So they were kind of saying, listen, it is a big loss, but at the same time, we've got good money for him and we've reinvested it. So they were positive. But I think the pitches out there were awful. I think they had a couple of injuries from the pitches and also the training facilities. So that's one thing, I suppose.
At the other end of the getting their business done early spectrum are Leicester, meanwhile. Just to finish off on the fixture list, they're going to be at home to Brentford Sunday at 2 o'clock. Haven't signed anyone, the only Premier League club yet to have anybody coming in, and they have got players going out. Now, Kasper Schmeichel this week going to Nice, which is an interesting move. Laurie, you used to work the Midlands beat. What's going on at Leicester? How worried are you for the Foxes?
Yeah, I hear kind of conflicting things. Heard that it was a little bit unsettled, in terms of Brendan Rodgers coming into, I think it's his third and a bit season. He's obviously done really well there, but is there a sense of, you want to avoid it becoming stale, don't you? And I guess new signings, help with that. And Kasper Schmeichel going is a major change for Leicester, 11 years, I think it was. And then also the fact that, Wesley Fofana, Chelsea are after him, Yuri Tillemans, what's happening there? Newcastle making a bid for James Maddison. It feels like a lot of clubs are seeing Leicester as an opportunity to benefit from. But at the same time, they've only lost Schmeichel so far. So then other people that are close to the club say, well, you know, this is all getting very histrionic. And actually, you know, Brendan Rodgers had a good pre-season with the club and it's all fine. And, you know, we carry on. And now that they've got Fofana back fit, he was obviously missing, wasn't he, for a lot of last season. And they really, really rate him. If he can actually stay and play, you kind of think they've got a much better chance. So I don't know, I'm really conflicted about Leicester because they were kind of up and down last season, weren't they, after those two really solid seasons where they failed just to make it into the Champions League at the final bit. So I think there'll be one to watch, certainly, in terms of the stories. I think there'll be stuff coming out of there.
Who's going to be the number one after Schmeichel's disappearance?
They might sign someone. I mean, Danny Ward's has been the deputy for a long time, and they signed him for like 10-11 million, I think, from Liverpool, you know, a good number of years ago, when, you know, he's been playing for Wales as well, so he's kind of an international. He's a good goalkeeper. You know, he got Huddersfield promoted with that penalty shootout save, didn't he? So I guess he would be thinking, right, I've got a chance now. But at the same time,
Brendan said if we sign someone, it'll be a number three. He said guys that are left are going to fight it out. That's Danny Ward and Iverson, who's had a number of loan spells. He's a decent keeper. He's played in the EFL. But I think I would imagine Ward will get the nod. But Ward, I think, has been injured for part of pre-season, so he's not nailed on to start the first game. So, yeah, it's going to be two rookie keepers, really, of sorts that battle it out at the outset. But, yeah, I think being settled is not the worst thing in the world. But, sure, I mean, Leicester are a very ambitious club, aren't they? They're not afraid to spend money. I can only assume they're deliberately waiting until later in the window to make their moves, depending on who they lose. Yeah, I think they might lose Tielemans, but they're probably working on a possible replacement now, and maybe the same for the other guys.
Well, there were some interesting quotes from Brendan Rodgers a few days ago where he was saying that he hadn't realised that there were, if not financial difficulties, then financial constraints that he hadn't been aware of and was then subsequently made aware of. It seems to me that his understanding is that there perhaps isn't a huge amount of cash to spend.
I don't know if that's FFP or if it's the duty-free, you know, King Power sort of business taking a bit of a hit after the pandemic, and, you know, the fact that obviously people weren't going through airports as frequently. But I think FFP might be a thing that they're considering at the moment, yeah.
Cool.
But I mean, like, as ever, we get, you know, when you come to preview the new season, it's normal to kind of focus on transfers because they're, you know, the most exciting things, you know, new faces and people posing with their kits and all the rest of it. But, you know, there was that season not so long ago when Tottenham went into the season having not signed a single player and actually had a brilliant season. If you've got a good group of players, if you've got a coach who, you know, whose ideas are in place, and if you've got everyone pulling in the same direction, that doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to be left by the wayside against all the teams who have done loads of business. So it need not be a death knell for Leicester's ambitions, even if, as a Leicester fan, you'd probably hope to see a few more faces through the door between now and the end of the window.
We'll bring it full circle. That's obviously 95, 96. You don't win anything with kids, and how Ferguson sold, you know, three main players and brought in a load of youngsters. But on that Tottenham thing, I would just say, there's certain people that think that summer that they didn't sign anyone. They might have had a good season, but then it also laid the foundation for the implosion
that Pochettino
had. So the refreshment needed to be continuous rather than, that was their season, I think, to make a move, and they didn't. And okay, they might have had a good one, but then it kind of had a knock-on effect later down the line.
That's less positive for Foxes fans. Anyway, there you go. Brentford will be their visitor Sunday at 2:00, and Monday we'll be back to review all of the results from this opening round of the brand new Premier League campaign. Do join us for that, listener. For now, though, may I say many, many thanks to Laurie Whitwell for joining us today. Laurie, have you got any Man United or similar content up on The Athletic that people should look out for?
Just to continue the doom and gloom, I've got a piece talking about Welcome to Managing Manchester United, Erik ten Hag, which is touching on the Ronaldo issue, the fact that they haven't signed his main target, Frenkie de Jong, talks over Benjamin Zesco, the young striker at Red Bull Salzburg, kind of difficult. Has anything, you know, massively changed? Just the kind of, you know, the media focus that you get at Manchester United. You know, he's trying to put an end to any disputes internally with players. Ajax, yeah, that might have been job done. He's got the authority. At Manchester United, it doesn't quite work like that.
Wow. All right. Well, if you're a United fan or an ABU just wanting to rubberneck, that's where you should head. And meanwhile, Adrian and Tom, people can enjoy your work in the brand new and exciting publication, the Totally Football book.
Yes, I've written a piece about Gareth Bale and his relationship with Wales.
Right.
And I believe you can pre-order the Totally Football book already. I saw Nick Miller at the Arsenal All or Nothing premiere the other night, and I asked him how it had all gone, and he seemed very pleased.
Well, that's good.
Thumbs up all round.
Excellent. Adrian, what's your bit on in the book?
It was looking at the EFL season just gone, but mainly it was the trend and fashion for former youth coaches to be handed the reins with EFL clubs and how they thrived. I mean, it's incredible the change in the last 12 to 18 months of the style of manager that we're seeing right across the 72 EFL clubs. So, yeah, hopefully it's an interesting read.
Brilliant. Nice one. Well, that'll be out. When's the book out, Tom?
I think October the 1st.
October the 1st.
Is the release date.
Pre-order now while trees last. Good. We have come to the end of today's show, so as I say, many thanks to Laurie and to Tom and to Adrian and producer Charlie and you listener. Everybody have a great weekend, enjoy the football, and we'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.